I grew up around a father and a mother who read every chance they got, who took us to the library every Thursday night to load up on books for the coming week. Most nights after dinner, my father stretched out on the couch to read, while my mother sat with her book in the easy chair, and the three of us kids each retired to our own private reading stations. Our house was very quiet after dinner, unless, that is, some of my father's writer friends were over. My father was a writer, as were most of the men with whom he hung out. They were not the quietest people on earth, but they were mostly very masculine and kind. Usually in the afternoons, when that day's work was done, they hung out at the no-name bar in Sausalito. But sometimes they came to our house for drinks and ended up staying for supper. I loved them. But every so often, one of them would pass out at the dinner table. I was an anxious child to begin with, and I found this unnerving. Every morning, no matter how late he had been up, my father rose at 5:30, went to his study, wrote for a couple of hours, made us all breakfast, read the paper with my mother, and then went back to work for the rest of the morning. Many years passed before I realized that he did this by choice, for a living, and that he was not unemployed or mentally ill. I wanted him to have a regular job where he put on a necktie and went off somewhere with the other fathers and sat in a little office and smoked, but the idea of spending entire days in someone else's office doing someone else's work did not suit my father's soul. I think it would have killed him. He did end up dying rather early, in his mid-50s, but at least he had lived on his own terms. So, I grew up around this man who sat at his desk in the study all day and wrote books and articles about the places and people he had seen and known. He read a lot of poetry. Sometimes he traveled. He could go any place he wanted with a sense of purpose. One of the gifts of being a writer is that it gives you an excuse to do things, to go places and explore. Another is that writing motivates you to look closely at life as it lurches by and tramps around. Writing taught my father to pay attention. My father, in turn, taught other people to pay attention and then to write down their thoughts and observations. His students were the prisoners at San Quentin who took part in the creative writing program. But he taught me, too, mostly by example. He taught the prisoners and me to put a little bit down on paper every day and to read all the great books and plays we could get our hands on. He taught us to read poetry. He taught us to be bold and original and to let ourselves make mistakes, and that Thurber was right when he said, "You might as well fall flat on your face as lean over too far backwards." But while he helped the prisoners and me to discover that we had a lot of feelings and observations and memories and dreams and God knows opinions we wanted to share, we all ended up just the tiniest bit resentful when we found the one fly in the ointment, that at some point we had to actually sit down and write. I believe writing was easier for me than for the prisoners because I was still a child. But I always found it hard. I started writing when I was 7 or 8. I was very shy and strange-looking, loved reading above everything else, weighed about 40 pounds at the time, and was so tense that I walked around with my shoulders up to my ears like Richard Nixon. I saw a home movie once of a birthday party I went to in the first grade with all these cute little boys and girls playing together like puppies, and all of a sudden I scuttled across the screen like Prufrock's crab. I was very clearly the one who was going to grow up to be a serial killer or keep dozens and dozens of cats. Instead, I got funny. I got funny because boys, older boys I didn't even know, would ride by on their bicycles and taunt me about my weird looks. Each time felt like a drive-by shooting. I think this is why I walked like Nixon. I think I was trying to plug my ears with my shoulders, but they wouldn't quite reach. So, first, I got funny, and then I started to write, although I did not always write funny things. The first poem I wrote that got any attention was about John Glenn. The first stanza went, "Colonel John Glenn went up to heaven in his spaceship, Friendship 7. There were many, many verses. It was like one of the old English ballads my mother taught us to sing while she played the piano. Each song had 30 or 40 verses, which would leave my male relatives flattened to our couches and armchairs as if by centrifugal force, staring unblinking up at the ceiling." The teacher read the John Glenn poem to my second grade class. It was a great moment. The other children looked at me as though I had learned to drive. It turned out that the teacher had submitted the poem to a California State Schools competition, and it had won some sort of award. It appeared in a mimeographed collection. I understood immediately the thrill of seeing oneself in print. It provides some sort of primal verification. You are in print, therefore you exist.